We've come up with a theme for our December podcasts. I wonder if our listeners can guess what it is, or will they think we're nuts?
And welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dean Ash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden on several acres out in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Hi, Carol.
Hello, Dee. Let's address your voice first. So
yeah,
listeners
I'm
won't
sick.
Think that it's a bad cold, huh?
Yeah, bad cold. But I'm on the upswing. So before I have a coughing fit, let's move on.
We'll power through. So my garden update is microgreens have been started in the sunroom. I need to run out there this week and dig up some cannas that I left in a container. And I need to dig those up, store those for the winter. That's about it. I mowed on the coldest day we've had in the last week.
You're crazy. I'm not mowing anymore. It is really warm here in Oklahoma. We are in the 70s, which is not what we usually are in November and December. So I'm kind of chomping at the bit to go outside and plant my bulbs, but I can't. But I did plant some more amaryllis bulbs, and I have three miracle amaryllis bulbs on my desk that I'm looking at that I need to get into pots. So the problem is the amaryllis bulbs got here so late that I already used the pots for something else. So I'm going to have to go find some pots, but I'm sure I can. And
what's special about the miracle amaryllis, that variety?
They're shorter with great, great big blooms. I've grown them before.
Oh,
I got them from John Sheepers or Van Engelen, probably Van Engelen, and they're red. There aren't any more. They're out of stock. I think everybody's out of stock, don't you?
Pretty much. I mean, somebody had asked me 6 weeks ago about ordering amaryllis, and I sent them to John Sheepers, which is the retail side of the Van Engelen or whatever it is.
Right.
And I noticed some sold outs. So, and that was a little while back.
Yeah. I went up and looked at Miracle for this podcast, so I know it's sold out.
Well, way to tempt everybody. Let's hit it with a quote.
Okay.
I heard a bird sing in the dark of December, a magical thing and sweet to remember. We are nearer to spring than we were in September. I heard a bird sing in the dark of December by Oliver Herford.
Herford. I think we used this one last year and it's a good one. So good to use it again.
We did. And I have a cross stitch on a quote. And I thought, you know what? We're just going to use that one because when this podcast episode drops, it will be December the 1st.
Which is tomorrow.
Yeah. So you picked out a very unusual flower for us to talk about.
I did.
Well, you said, let's do Jerusalem artichokes and sunchokes. And I said, I think they're the same thing.
And they are.
Helianthus tuberosus, a perennial.
Yes. They are a perennial, a quite aggressive perennial in my climate. I don't know about yours.
I believe that they would be considered aggressive here. And I think that they get very tall.
They do.
And they have yellow, pretty yellow sunflowers, not great big flowers, but yellow, you know, hold your thumb and fingers together to make a circle sunflowers.
Yeah, about 2 inches across sunflower-y looking things.
And so the thing is, they are not at all an artichoke. No way, shape, or form. I don't know why they call them.
And they're not from Jerusalem either.
No. So the best information that we found about them is from our friend Ellen Zakos, the Backyard Forager. And we're going to link to her article. And so here's the caution for people. There's two cautions. Number one.
Okay.
If you plant it, you will have it there forever.
Forever.
So be careful. And she says, number two, it's the gateway food for beginning foragers. So be careful because you might end up in the foraging once you get these. I don't know.
So the only place I've ever seen them grown in someone's garden was in Ellen's garden, and she has them in her little tiny garden in Santa Fe because she loves them so much.
I think I read about somebody that has them in Southern Indiana, and they kind of had them like in the behind the barn, kind of like out of the way.
Yeah.
So Ellen's suggestion is that you dig roots from fall to spring whenever you can dig. You don't want to dig into frozen ground, because if you dig roots, and that's the part you eat, by the way, people, we didn't make that clear. It is the roots, the tubers that you eat.
Uh-huh.
If you dig in the summer, they will not be like big or anything. They'll be all mushy, she says.
Right. And they will be small too. So you want to grow, you want to do it really right now is the perfect time. And they make a pretty little sunflower. I would not grow them anywhere that I didn't want them forever. Up by the barn sounds like a good place.
And so they are edible, but
I've never eaten them.
Talking about them as if, no, I've never eaten them. I'm not even sure. I mean, you eat the root, but like, do you like, I don't know what you do with the root.
Well, I know that you can fry them. I know you can put them in soups. In fact, I think I sent you a recipe from a vegetarian cookbook I was reading last week before I got sick. And because I just read cookbooks for fun, and it had a recipe for a soup. And then our listener, Debbie Clem, she sent me a soup too, because right now, at least as of last week, you could still buy them at Natural Grocer, which is a grocery store chain. Do you guys have it in
Indiana? Not to my knowledge. If we do, I mean, I'm on the side of town that gets those last.
Right.
But the fancy north side might have one, but I don't.
Well, they came out of, it came out of Colorado, that chain did, and they only sell organic produce. So these are organic, and she's made soup several times. I hear they're quite good for you. And starchy.
Probably. They always think of the other root that you can eat are dahlia tubers. You can also eat those, which I've never eaten.
Mm. I'd probably eat a Jerusalem artichoke over a dahlia tuber. I'm just saying.
Yeah, me too. But anyway, it would be a nice flower if you have a big garden and kind of a, I don't want to say out of the way spot, but, you know, place it carefully. That's what we're going to say.
Yeah. Place it carefully because it multiplies, and eat it because you'll need to.
Speaking of eating, let's move on. You want me to save your voice and I'll do every quote, or you got this quote?
You go for it, because they'll be understanding it better.
Of all the months of the year, there is not a month one half so welcome to the young or so full of happy associations as the last month of the year. And that is by Charles Dickens. And that is true. December is a magical time for kids.
It is. It's a beautiful time, and you can do a lot indoors with plants. But we're going to talk for our veggie this time about chestnuts.
And that's our theme for this month is nut trees.
All the different nuts. You'll be nuts about nuts by the time we get finished.
Chestnuts.
So.
I've never eaten a chestnut.
I have. I've eaten chestnuts. I ate them when I was in high school, and I had them with hot buttered rum. Our neighbor decided to make both of those. I have to say they were okay. I didn't think they were all that great. I didn't think hot buttered rum was all that great either. So not my thing. But when I was the reason we were doing this is when I was in Porto, Portugal, there were vendors all over selling chestnuts because it was St. Martin's Day. And, you could roast them yourself if you wanted to, but everybody was roasting them. No, I didn't buy any, but they were very popular.
Yeah. The thing we should say about chestnuts is it's kind of a sad story. The American chestnut, and we're going to link to a website called the American Chestnut Foundation. But at one time, they estimated that in North America, this between Canada and the United States, there were 4 billion with a B chestnut trees.
Right.
And then a blight from Asia got introduced and wiped them all out. And so I need to do some more reading. If you have a chestnut tree now, it's probably a Chinese chestnut.
Maybe.
Or a European.
I don't know if anywhere left at all. I think there might be a few in the United States, because like all trees, there might be one that's genetically diverse enough that it managed to make it. But really and truly, they say that the whole East Coast and the middle part of the Eastern United States, that the reason it has so much beautiful color is due to maple trees, but it's because the chestnuts got wiped out. And so the maple trees were able to kind of take over in their place. So we wouldn't have the kind of, the color would be different and the forests would be different.
Right. Right. Now, this American Chestnut Foundation, they are working on restoring the American chestnut.
Right.
And trying to figure, you know, make, not make, but find trees that are resistant to this blight and then reintroduce them. And so doing a lot of tree breeding and some biocontrols and things like that. And my hats are off to them. That is not going, that's not an easy task.
No, it's not an easy task. And it's not unlike what happened to elm trees when the Dutch elm disease came in and it wiped all of them out.
The ash trees when the emerald ash borer came about 10 years right. ago.
There's a lot of things that have certainly changed. So pine wilt beetles, another one. But I think the chestnut was our first wake-up call that something could come across and just wipe everything out.
Yes. Yes. And so that's kind of a downer, Dee. Kind of a downer we're talking
about. I'm sorry. Well, in Europe, they still have chestnuts. And the European, we also might link you, or you can go find it on the same website. It tells you the differences between the European chestnut and the American chestnut. And European chestnuts are what are primarily eaten.
Yes. Now. And I buy stuff from a company called nuts.com. They have a,
yes, I bought from them.
They have an Earl Grey tea that is really good because you can actually see the leaves in the bag, not just dust. So good.
Right.
So I was on there yesterday because I was running out of tea and I thought I need to order some. They have chestnuts. And they have some advice on keeping chestnuts. So they said when you get a little bag of chestnuts, it should have little holes in it to keep the moisture
right.
and to preserve the freshness. They are extremely perishable. So they ship, you know, they have to be refrigerated. They have to be kept from freezing. You know, it's like they said, you keep them in the refrigerator as close to freezing without freezing them.
Yeah, you try to keep them really, really cold. And in Porto, they were being sold in great big large baskets, just bulk. That's how you could see them.
Yeah.
If you're going to get them, I would say cook them really quickly, even though this says that you can keep them up to 2 weeks.
Yeah. It says to put a damp paper towel in the bag with them so that they have the high moisture.
And they are moist inside. They're not like a nut, as I remember it. They're pretty big, a good inch across, inch and a half. And they're pretty moist. And that hole opens up. And then inside of it is this kind of moist meat. I thought they tasted like basically nothing, but that was just me. One of our listeners is going to write in and go, Dee doesn't know what she's talking about. Chestnuts are fabulous.
Yeah, it says that this nuts.com, and I'll link to the where you can buy them from them. We get nothing for it. But they said you can boil them or roast them, bake in the oven for at 425 for 10 to 15 minutes. Until the outer skin starts to peel back. And then you can also cook them over an open flame because you want chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Right. You can do that if you'd like this year with your kids.
We are not doing that, are we?
No, I'm not doing that. I've seen it done once. I've tasted them in New York. That was good enough for me.
But you know, if you have I'm going to say again, you if you have a large property and you want to try to grow a chestnut, I would check out the American Chestnut Tree Foundation to see about finding native varieties. And there may be something that you can try. I don't know. Might be worth it. Might be kind of fun.
Sounds good to me.
I don't have a big enough property, so I'm not buying a chestnut.
No, huge trees.
As far as I know.
Right? They're huge trees.
As far as I know. All right. So I apparently did not put a quote before the bookshelf, so I will read the next quote. Yet my heart loves December's smile as much as July's golden beam. Then let us sit and watch the while the blue ice curdling on the stream. Emily Jane Bronte. We have not quoted any of the Brontes, and I thought, high time.
Yeah, it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you're going to talk about our book because I don't have this book. You got it. Didn't you get it when you were like judging books for, was it for GardenCom?
I was judging books for GardenCom and this book actually won a gold award in the publishing category. It's called The Conservatory, Gardens Under Glass by Alan Stein and Nancy Wirtz. And this is one of those coffee table books. And I would lift it up and show it to you, Dee, but I'll make a bunch of noise and mess my microphone up, which would be wrong.
We don't want that.
No, but it's one of those oversized coffee table books. It is filled with fabulous photos of all different conservatories around the world. And after you've spent some time reading this book, you really want to go visit a bunch of conservatories, because I think there's nothing more magical in December and January than to be inside a conservatory filled with tropical plants, and outside there is snow on the ground.
I completely agree. If you don't have your own greenhouse, and even then, if you do, I went through a stage where I was completely infatuated with conservatories, and I went to a lot of them. I've been to a bunch, and you're right. There's nothing better. And in large cities like Chicago, New York City, various boroughs in New York City, also Buffalo has a wonderful conservatory.
They do.
Because during the golden age, they figured out how to make glass sheets, and yes, large glass sheets. That was what made the conservatories become a thing. There's nothing worse than being in a conservatory in July, which you and I have done before.
We have. We have been in one in July, August timeframe.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And if they aren't air conditioned, which the big ones are, but if they aren't air conditioned, it's a real problem. In Oklahoma City, interestingly enough, we've talked about this once before, Ian Pei designed our conservatory, which is the Myriad Gardens. It's in the Myriad Gardens. And it's right now being completely rehabbed again. Because guess what? Glass houses are hard to take care of.
They are. There's several chapters on what they call glass houses. And then there's chapters on different types of conservatories and modern glass house marvels, such as the, I think you've been there, the Amazon Spheres in Seattle. It's in here.
Yep, I've been there.
Yes. But the thing I thought with this book, which would be kind of fun, and only like a bunch of gardening geeks like you or I would think, hey, they have New World Conservatories, and they have like, I don't know, there's 20 listed. Wouldn't it be fun to go to every single one of these and check them off a list? Because people say, well, I'm going to go to every presidential birthplace, or I'm going to go to
baseball stadiums.
Every baseball stadium, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you could go, and I was going through here, and D, I bet you you've been more than I have, but I'm going to tell you once I think you've been to.
Okay.
Have you been to the Conservatory of Flowers in San Francisco?
I definitely have. Yes.
And
I thought you came with me to that one, but I don't think
I did.
You
not.
Did. You were not on
not.
That trip. Okay.
No.
Next.
So I have not been to the New York Botanical Garden.
I've been there.
I knew that. Phipps Conservatory. We've both been there.
Went there. It's in Pittsburgh, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mark Twain's home is listed as a big conservatory. Haven't been there. That's in Hartford, Connecticut. The Biltmore Estate, we've been there.
Many times, yes.
The Howard Peters Rawlings Conservatory in Baltimore, I haven't been there.
I have not been there.
Franklin Park Conservatory in Columbus, Ohio, I have been there.
I have not.
Buffalo Botanical Garden, we've both been there.
Yes, twice.
The Fernery at Morris Arboretum in Philadelphia. I've not been there.
You know what? I didn't go there. I went to Philadelphia with my daughter, but I didn't drag her to a conservatory.
Belle Isle Conservatory in Detroit. I haven't been there.
Haven't been there.
Volunteer Park Conservatory in Seattle.
You know what? I'm sure we've been there. Yes.
I'm going to give that a maybe. Garfield Park Conservatory in Chicago, that's a yes.
Totally remember that one.
Lincoln Park in Chicago, been there, yes.
To that one too.
Longwood Gardens, I have not been to that one. That one's famous in Kennett Square.
No, that's on my bucket list to go to Longwood.
The Marjorie McNeely Conservatory in St. Paul, Minnesota.
No.
Nope. The Balboa Botanical Building in San Diego, California. No.
No. I've been to San Diego.
The United States Botanic Garden in Washington, D.C. That's a yes for you and no for me.
Yeah, because it's at the Smithsonian, isn't it?
I think so.
I think.
The Crystal Garden in Victoria, British Columbia.
I have actually been there. Yes.
I knew that. And the Allen Gardens Conservatory in Toronto, Ontario.
I did not go to Toronto, so no.
So you probably licked out half this, 80% of this list, and I'm probably at 60%, maybe 50%.
So I'm really surprised that they didn't mention the glass house or conservatory at St. Louis Botanical Garden. It's famous.
Yes, they did mention it. It is mentioned.
Because it's weird. It's a sphere. Anyway, I've been there too. I told you I was obsessed.
I know you're obsessed. And it's in another chapter. I'm looking at the table of contents. I know they've talked about it.
I'm sure they did because it's very famous and it's still operational and they use it all the time. There's also a glass house at, up in Seattle at the famous glass blower, whose name I can't think of because I'm on way too much medication. You know, the guy who, Chihuly, the Chihuly Glass Gardens in Seattle. There's a glass house there too. A beautiful one.
Well, let me clarify. I talked about New World Conservatories. That was the list I gave you. Then they have Modern Glasshouse Marvels, which is the Forest Park Conservatory in St. Louis, Missouri. That is there. That's the other one you're talking about.
Yeah, probably. Okay.
And then they have a whole bunch all over the world. I just went through the ones here.
I'm sure they have Kew Gardens. You want to hear my sad Kew Gardens story?
I want to hear your... Go ahead.
When we went to England the first time, one of the excitements is that we were going to go to Kew Gardens. And it's famous for its Victorian glass houses. And it was really hard to get to Kew Gardens from where we were. And it took most of the morning. We finally get there and Bill and I head for the houses because he knew that was what right. I wanted to see. It's also famous for a big walkway through the trees, which everyone should go to. Anyway, long story short, they were all completely covered because they were under restoration. But since then, they've been finished. So I missed out on Kew.
That's like going to London to hear Big Ben and then finding out that clock. How long has it been out of service because they've been fixing it or restoring it?
I think they fixed it. I think it's done. I think it's back, but I don't know. Anyway, they were covered with plastic wrap, but it was all white. And so they looked like shrink wrapped deals. It was interesting.
You'll have to go back. Anyway,
I'll have to go back someday.
Obviously, this is a really fun book. Tons of great pictures, historical pictures and modern pictures. And that's The Conservatory Gardens Under Glass by Alan Stein and Nancy Wirtz. It'd make a great gift for any gardener who is obsessed with conservatories.
I think I need it. Maybe I'll put that on my list for my kids.
Yeah, because I think it's about $40.
Yeah, it's kind of expensive. But, you know, when you get those big books with those big pictures, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, these two... You can tell they love conservatories and it's just really, really a really good book.
Good. A delight to read.
A delight to read.
So our dirt.
You came up with this one, Dee.
Our dirt.
I don't even know what to say.
So there's this term and it's called cardening. And that doesn't mean that you're gardening on cards. It means you're gardening inside your car. And, the idea was if you don't have enough sunlight at home, grow things inside your car. Well, if you tried to do that in Oklahoma in the summer, you'd just fry everything.
Well, this is from a journal called Southwest Journal. You would have to leave the windows open in the Southwest, and they show a cactus garden. I'm not sure this is a good idea, not
Dee. Well, especially growing cacti in your car. I mean, that just seems like a bad idea all the way around.
Yeah, you hit the brakes and it goes flying off the dash and into your lap. Ouch.
Yeah, that would not be pleasant for anybody, you or the cactus. So I think this guy came up with this. His name is Adam Overland. And so it's the art and science of gardening. It's gardening in your car. I want to know if any of our listeners do it.
I can make some funny jokes, but I'm going to pass.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. Now I've seen people that put a garden in the bed of a pickup truck.
Yeah. We know someone who did that.
We do know somebody that did that.
He's quite famous. He's a famous garden speaker and he grew stuff in the back of his pickup because he was trying to show that you know, you can garden anywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Let's go to our rabbit holes.
You go first.
Okay. So Dee, I really kind of blame you again.
Why is it always my fault?
Because I saw the documentary last week about the booksellers and loved it. So I found another documentary about typewriters called California Typewriter.
I've seen this and it's great.
Now, the typewriter store sadly closed around spring of 2020 because the guy wanted to retire, and a typewriter repair shop is not a profitable business, can be an unprofitable business.
But anyway,
the documentary is all about typewriters and was done in, I think, 2017. And it's all kinds of people that are obsessed with them. They had collectors. And of course, the most famous typewriter collector is Tom Hanks.
Yes.
But there were guys that collected other typewriters. The resurgence of typewriters among the young people, they really want typewriters. Different artists and writers and musicians who still like to use typewriters. And I think if the singer was John Mayer, they had a, you know, quite a bit of interviewing with him. But he talked about how, you know, they would find the scraps of paper that musicians like from the 60s would write their song lyrics on. And he said you could see their process and you could see where they went, what they crossed off. And he says, all my stuff that's digital, it's backed up on hard drives and stuff. He says, I'm never going to go back at that. And so he started using a typewriter to write his song lyrics.
Yeah. Oh, I have a confession. About a year ago, I went on eBay and bought myself a little electric typewriter. And I do use it sometimes. I love that thing.
Well, I got to tell you, I've got a typewriter that was my grandmother's, but it's had one too many grandkids pounding on it. It's one of those great big black ones.
Yep.
So two of the keys don't work. And I don't know if they're busted work, don't work, but I don't think it can be fixed. And I gave my typewriter from college away to my ex-sister-in-law who wanted to use it like his decor, just sitting on a shelf.
Right.
I want it back. But anyway, so I'm obsessed with typewriters. And when we get done recording, Dee, we're going to share screen. You're going to help me pick out the one I want to buy on Etsy.
Okie dokie. Sounds good. My typewriter is a beautiful light blue and I like her a lot. She's a girl. I decided. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right. So my rabbit hole is it's on a website called listenwell.org. And the essay for November was called The Great Gardener. And you guys should go listen to it because it's really good. We will link to it. And my best friend, Amy, sent me this. She doesn't garden, but she knew I would love it. And I did. And it was just beautifully done. And I sent it to Carol. So I'm not going to give you any surprises. It's very uplifting. And in this season, we can use things that are uplifting.
Yes, we can. So we're all ready to garden commissions. Your voice is holding up well, Dee.
So far, so good.
Tell us about what you're going to do, and then I'll tell us what I'm going to do.
Well, I bought a new treadmill, and because my old treadmill broke, and I tried to have it fixed, and it wouldn't fix. So I invested in a commercial treadmill, which I used a bunch before I got sick. And I haven't used it since I got sick because obviously I'm just trying to get over this. But the point of that is I'm trying to stay strong for spring. I also have free weights that I lift. And because gardening is hard work.
It is.
And you don't want to have an injury. And that's something you learn as you get older, is that you can't just go out there and start digging holes in the spring and cutting things back and not hurt yourself.
Very good. Well, you said you've stopped mowing. I'm just picking up leaves at this point. And so it is a beautiful week. And I think on Friday, I'll be heading out to pick up some more leaves. I've got a few more vegetable beds to cover up. I got to get rid of the broom corn and some fig branches. And I also got the first seed catalog of the season in the mail a couple of weeks ago. So I'm starting to think about seeds for spring.
Yeah, me too. I got high mowing seeds. That's the catalog I got.
Really? I got pine tree garden seeds. That's the one I got.
Huh.
Interesting. Huh. The other thing is this Saturday, which would be, what's the Saturday? The 4th of December. I will be on the radio on WXTK with the garden lady, C.L. Frenari, out of Cape Cod. I'll be early in the morning on the radio there. I think she's going to give away one of my books.
Awesome.
And then I was on a podcast called Cottage on the Court with our friend Terry Spite. And that's been published. I'll leave a link for that if people want to hear me talk to Terry. She's out of Washington, D.C. She has two books coming out this spring.
Yeah, she's been really, really busy.
So it's been a busy, not a really busy time, but I'm going to mow one more time.
You go for it.
And that's it. That's all we got. We want to thank you for listening to The Garden Angelist. If you like our podcast, please tell your friends about us. Also hit that subscribe button so you don't miss anything.
And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by others. Could you also share our podcast with your gardening friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
Yes, and be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites. And if you want to help support us, use the affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission, and it costs you nothing.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the garden gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.